Please note that in this recording, some of the questions may be inaudible, but the master's answers are audible and clear.
Any questions you would like to ask? Yes.
No, I have a question about these two words you used yesterday. And one is resignation and the other is surrender.
Other is? Surrender.
And I wanted to relate a very short little experience I once had in college, the nature center. And something happened when I started to make this, where I slipped into unfriendly reality. And there was a moment there where I wasn't dealing with the mind that deals with this environment, and eating and taking care of yourself, but went into kind of another reality that on some level, some part of me surrendered to. And for the entire time I was making that thing, I felt like I wasn't there, but I was there. And when you use the word resignation, it seems to me it has a bad connotation. But there wasn't, when I made this switch from this reality to this other reality, there was a kind of resignation made by the mind that deals with this thing. And it strikes me that you give up some sort of material or physical thing to move into another sort of reality. And when you say resignation, you mean, or surrender, you mean a conscious kind of shift into another sensibility or reality, or you mean...
Well, sister, I explained yesterday, there's no difference between surrender and resignation. It is the same thing. We all have our individual experiences, which is very difficult to analyze what they mean. And real resignation is when you are able to control your mind, go beyond the realm of mind and Maya. When you go beyond the realm of mind and Maya, you have absolutely dominate your mind. Then you can say, I have surrendered my mind to my master. I have surrendered this mind to the Shabad and Naam. Or I am merging into the higher self. That is resignation. That is surrender.
So you don't surrender anything physical.
What is physical?
Like you don't surrender. You renounce.
There's no question of physical surrender. What is physical surrender?
Well, I'm believing what
you
owe, or somehow
giving what I'm supposed to. Oh, no, certainly not. You have to detach your mind from all these things. You have not to leave them. You have to detach your mind from these things. Having them, you are not possessed by them. You possess them, they don't possess you at all. Surrender is to higher self, that higher consciousness, eliminating your mind.
Can the higher self ever dictate? Can your higher self ever dictate kind of denunciation?
You see, actually this is a mind, higher type of mind you can call it. It is not that higher self. This is all mind. Mind projects in many ways, many forms. Mind can also be a very good friend. Mind can also be your enemy. It is the same mind. When it is pulling towards the senses, it is your enemy. When it is filled with devotion and love for the Father, it is your best friend. When it is pulling you upward, it is the same mind. But these individual experiences are very difficult to analyze what they actually mean.
But there seems to be a difference between the feeling and that.
They are all individual experiences. Yes?
Remember reading in the book answered the question about the dream. And said not to pay, not to give instructions. And I've only recently been initiated in 2.5 years. And I've noticed that on occasion I have dreams, which I actually feel like they were trying to help me.
Well, sister, good dream is a good dream. But we can't analyze and try to find any meaning in the dreams because we don't know what they mean. So we can be wrong in interpreting them, in analyzing them. So why analyze them? Why interpret them?
I think I understand that. To me, it was impossible. The question was, is it my imagination or what would I experience with you?
You see, experiences which is within your control. In dream, a thing comes and goes. You have no control over these things. Yes? Well, it's just a hair splitting. Emotion is also same thing. Love is also same thing. There's no difference at all. You can call it devotional love, higher love, higher emotions, lower emotions. I mean, these are our own way of drawing meaning from these words. Emotion is also a part of love. Question is how much love you have. What is the depth of that love? Call it emotion, then love, then devotion, then longing. They're all the same thing practically. You see. Yes, yes, yes.
Can you please... What should be our attitude toward the beggars in the street? And could you say something about charity, please?
Well, you often hear it, charity begins at home. First, we must look ourselves, our obligations, towards whatever we have taken on our shoulder, we must discharge all those obligations. And then, of course, we should also have the habit of giving something in charity. But we must be sure that our charity is rightly used. We give to a beggar out of pity, in spirit of charity. He goes and drinks. He goes and gambles. Then it's no use of our giving him and spoiling him. If you think that he needs it and he will make the best use of it, then there's no harm in giving charity. But we should not blow trumpets of our charity. We are meant to help each other. But we should not have any sting to that charity. That because I am helping him, then when the occasion rises, he will also help me now or in the next birth. That sting should not be there. It should be unconditional charity. We just give it and forget about it. It is not to inflate our ego. Rather to detach ourselves from the wealth. That should be the object of giving charity. Christ has very beautifully written about charity in Sermon on the Mount. Yes?
Can you speak about building an atmosphere of meditation?
Building?
Building an atmosphere of meditation.
Well, the meetings we hold, the company, good company we keep, the books we read, this is just, we are building an atmosphere in which we can build our meditation. Because we are always affected by the environments, by the atmosphere in which we live. We are always affected by that. You go to a happy person, he makes you happy. You go to a miserable person, he makes you miserable. So you are affected by the company of the person you are keeping. So if there is an atmosphere of meditation and devotion and love for the Lord, so naturally you are also influenced by that. So you also start thinking the same way. So atmosphere always helps us. That is why people go to churches and mosques or temples, just to have that atmosphere, to feel the feeling of that atmosphere in which we can remember the Father, we can fill ourselves with love and devotion for the Father. Otherwise, the same books are at home, same brick and mortar is at home, nothing particular there. It is only the atmosphere we go and try to seek there, which reminds us of the Father. So atmosphere goes along. That is why we hold satsang so often. We hold meetings, we write so many books. Yes, yes.
At the level that's achieved for removing the soul from the body, does the time gradually become much less? And is it unreasonable to expect that at a certain time this could happen quite rapidly?
What do you mean by time becoming less? That energy is a soul, energy of the soul. Energy of your own, that energy is the soul, energy of your self. You become unconscious of the time and space when you go beyond that realm of mind and maya. Time is a very comparative word. Yes? Sister, you can do whatever you want to do, but only that will happen which is destined to happen. It is not in your hand to control anything or to achieve anything. Only that will happen which has to happen. So you can do your best whatever way you think. You can plan, you can time control, you can do whatever you feel like. But only that thing will happen which is destined to happen. Yes?
In moderation, it seems that we could lose a lot of time doing a lot of things that would never happen. And I would like to know how you cut that time down.
Well, brother, it is for you to plan your day, how you want to spend it. We have to do our worldly duties also, worldly obligations we have. We have to attend to our worldly works. And also we have to attend to meditation. So we know what we prefer. How much time we have to involve in the worldly things, how much time we have to give to meditation. It is an individual planning. You can't fix any line. Because everybody has a different type of obligations, different type of responsibilities and different type of involvements. So you can't draw any particular line. Normally we are told to attend to meditation for 2.5 hours. And then we also have to sleep, we also have to work. We have so many other obligations which we have to go through. Yes. Well, sister, everybody has to build one's own atmosphere. Brick and mortar doesn't give you any atmosphere anywhere. You have to build your own atmosphere in which you have to live by reading books, by attending meetings if opportunity comes. Everybody has to create one's own fold in which one has to live.
Maharaj, I have a real stressful job. You know, I have a lot of deadlines and things like that. And lately I've been doing something that's really been nice. I've been asking the master to just do the work for me. And it's really been working real well. And for instance, I'll have a client that's going to come in for a meeting. And I know that they're going to sort of give me a hard time. So I just ask you to handle it for me. And it works really nicely. And it makes
well, you are already doing it.
It makes it a lot lighter.
Good. Yes.
Back to the emotion and devotion question. I was wondering if one feels void of emotions, not feeling emotional, are you necessarily devoid of love?
Sister, there is a seed of love in every one of us, whether we are conscious of it or not conscious of it. Because soul is yearning to become one with the Father. It is a drop of the divine ocean. Day and night the soul is yearning to become one with the Father. It is only the weight of the mind which is keeping it separated from the Father, which is keeping it away from the Father. The moment you remove that load, it automatically goes back to the Father. So that bond of love and that link of devotion is there within every one of us. Needle is always attracted. Magnet always pulls the needle. Needle is always attracted towards the magnet. But if you put a weight over the needle, it just becomes helpless. Not that it is not being attracted by the magnet, or the pull is not there. Everything is there, but if the weight is so much, it becomes helpless. And that is what the condition is of our soul. But for that spark of love which is within every one of us, nobody will think about the Father. Nobody will think about the path. Nobody will be conscious even that I don't have so much love for the Father. Unless the love is there, we don't become conscious at all that we have no love for the Father. It is there. So that is why we think we want more and more of it. And we don't experience more and more of it. We are not satisfied what we have. So we think we have no love for the Father. We have love for the Father. Well, don't try to calculate that by loving the Father, how much karmas you have been able to destroy, and how much you have to think about the Father, and how much time it will take you to destroy. It's not a mathematics calculation about these things. The lover doesn't bother at all about anything at all. He only loves. He's only conscious of his love, and he only loves. He doesn't bother what is in the way, when he is going to get a union, and what are the problems in the love. He just loves. So we shouldn't think that this much time it will take me in meditation to become one with the Father, or I have been able to clear so much karmas, and so much karmas are left today, and this much I have, already cleared, this load is left. There's no calculation about these things at all. That process automatically goes on. Yes, yes.
Many years after satsang is initiated, the lower mind still tends to sow many seeds of dark things that causes the satsang to fluctuate with level of devotion to the master.
Well, brother, that is the duty of the mind.
So my question is, Maharaji, does that mean that the mind sowing these seeds, does that mean that the physical action have to naturally follow ultimately from these seeds, or is it divine remission from the master to allow perhaps the satsang not?
No. After coming on the path, we become more conscious of our weaknesses. Before that, we were not conscious of those weaknesses at all. Those weaknesses were still there. Those downward pulls were still there. But we used to rather take pride in those downward pulls. Now we know they are not right, so we have become more conscious of about them. We have not become worse than before. If you are in a room, absolutely it's a dark room, you don't see anything at all. If a little ray comes through the ventilator, then you see so many things you see moving about in the room. So many germs and so many, you see, pieces of dust and all that moving in there. Before that, you were not conscious at all because it was all darkness. Now a little ray has exposed to you all that is what is moving in the darkness. So similarly, when we come on the path, that little ray of light comes in us and we start feeling how weak we are, how bad we are. We are going downward. We are becoming worse. We are becoming conscious of our weaknesses. Before that, we were not conscious of those weaknesses. Before that, we never had that guilty feeling at all. Now we are having those guilty feelings. That is the only difference.
That doesn't naturally compel us to act on those weaknesses as we may have.
Unless we become conscious of those weaknesses, how can we get rid of them? First, we have to become conscious of those weaknesses, our own weaknesses. Then we try to get rid of them. Yes?
We talk about the father, we talk about the guru. Where does the philosophy of the Divine Mother, Blessed Mother, where does a female aspect of God enter in?
Well, when you talk about the Divine Father, you are talking about the female. Father is neither male nor a female. You can call it Divine Mother. If you're so conscious about that, you can call it Divine Mother. Father has no sex. Soul has no sex. This is just a way of explaining. You see, Father is neither a male nor a female. So we are absolutely safe. You see, many school of thoughts in India, they call Father Divine Mother. They don't call him Father, they call them Divine Ramakrishna Mission, they call it Divine Mother. It comes to the same thing. Yes?
Master, you mentioned yesterday that there can be no healing of the body, not healing of the mind. If our destiny points to us in a position where people with mental suffering turn to us for help.
I don't say that without the mind, body will not heal. Body may heal, but it will heal much better if the mind is also treated along with the body.
That's my question. What are we in a position to do realistically to help people with their mental problems and mental suffering?
Well, whatever you have been taught in your medical profession, you are also taught, you see, there's a psychiatrists and all that, you see, they only deal with the mind, they don't deal with the body.
I never found a way of looking at things that satisfied me other than Santmat.
Well, then be in the Santmat and heal thyself. Yes?
I mentioned there have been so many divorces There have been so many divorces.
Oh, sister, what can I say about that? My books are full with all that. And it pains me the most when I read that letter. The first sentence is, I am getting through a divorce. And hardly there is anything about santmat or spirituality or meditation. I think 99% letters are all family problem, couples problem, divorces and this and that, living together this way or that way. Sometimes we just get fed up. We don't want to write anything, but then we have to write unpleasant things also.
Could you speak to us about the spiritual significance of marriage?
What is the spiritual significance when we don't remain married at all? We don't remain married at all. If we believe in the spiritual significance of marriage, we will not divorce at all. I think when if you read my books, there is more on this subject rather than on santmat. Yes?
Pastor, I was asking you yesterday about suffering. I was thinking that if there's no free will, then in the end, all suffering is God's will.
What is God's will? I explained to you also yesterday, God's will is to go through our destiny, go through our karmas. And who committed those karmas? Actions in the past. And we are now harvesting that crop now, being in the body. So where is the free will? Free will was when I sow the seed in a field. When I go to collect the crop, there's no free will. So we have been sowing seed in the past lives, and now we are collecting the crop in this birth, as a part of destiny. So when everything is destined, what we have go through, where is the free will? There may be a limited free will or a conditioned free will. From the Lord's point of view, there is no free will. From our point of view, we can say we have free will. When we ignore our parentage, when we ignore our country, when we ignore our educational facilities, our environments, our atmosphere in which we have been brought up, if we ignore all that and then act and do, then we say, I have done it. I have free will to do it. If we also include all that, then probably our mind has been conditioned to work like that, think like that. Then there's no free will.
Sometimes in my work, I see people who are suffering so intensely that they want to die. They want to commit suicide. And they may ask me, why did I have to suffer?
Why should they ask you especially? They think you are very happy?
No, sometimes I'm like a psychiatrist.
You see, we have made our whole life hell. Not in this life, from previous lives. Misery is adding to misery is being added, misery is being added every time we take birth. The best way is to get out of it, to clear all those rubbish, all those karmas, to uproot all those seeds which we have sown. So we don't have to collect any crop at all. Yes?
Maharaj, along that line, could we say, or could it be said, from a santmat point of view, that karmas are accelerated from the karmic path? It's a clear model.
No question of accelerate. That's the wrong concept. They have to go in their own space, own time. Because your karma is not individual. It is connected with so many others. Our karmas are chained with one another. If your karmas have to be accelerated, what about the karmas with the people with whom you are connected? then all that has to be moved faster and faster. So destiny go in its own speed, in its own way. You only by meditation get this strength to go through those karmas. You only develop a strong willpower to go through those karmas without being much affected by them. That way you can say that you are accelerating. But not that what you had to finish in 10 years, you are going to finish in 1 year. That is the wrong concept. Yes?
Does the student have the same for everyone, or does it have its own kind of evolution that we just tune into? Does it go at the same speed for everyone?
So what do you mean by same for everyone?
I'm just wondering if Simran has a certain progression that you follow an individual.
Well, sister, effect of Simran may be individual, otherwise it will be the same Simran. Some people are absolutely fully absorbed in Simran, they just have full concentration in Simran. Some people are doing Simran and running about in the whole world. Thoughts are running out. Its effect may be different on each other, but Simran is the same. Yes?
All right, you talk about self-conscious feelings we have when we come to the past, when we fail. The feelings of remorse and guilt. What is the best way for us to deal with our negative feelings about ourselves?
Meditation. Instead of thinking about the past and cursing ourselves, it's better to take a positive step to attend to meditation.
Can we always feel the Master is behind us, loving us regardless of our failures?
Why not? You see, when He has put us on the path, then we don't become orphan. He's always there to guide us, to help us. Yes?
When I think about my problems and my happiness in the past, it seems that it's because my heart is not fully open. And I wonder if you could tell me how to open my heart.
Open your heart for what?
Because sometimes I feel that it's hard.
That is?
Sometimes I feel that I'm not very loving person.
Then be loving. Actually, the problem is that we analyze ourselves too much. And this analytical study of our own self doesn't lead us anywhere at all. We go on whole day analyzing our own self, then sometimes pitying ourselves, sometimes accusing ourselves, sometimes taking pride in all those things. Because mind is always keeps us busy in this way or another. What are there to analyze about ourselves?
Well, it seems like in other jazz, there are techniques for opening the heart center, which I feel that I need.
How do you open the heart center?
Maybe by praying.
What is your concept of the heart center?
I'm not sure, but in the past when I've done meditation for
you see, in Santmat, heart center is at the eye center. It is not the physical heart here. In Santmat, heart center is at here at the eye center. It's not the physical heart.
Well, I think I'm thinking of the heart chakra, which I know
Santmat doesn't feel. This heart is just expression of our emotions, nothing else. Our real heart center is at the eye. Yes?
There's pride and ego, which if we try to eliminate. But I'm wondering where praise and self-esteem fit into a person's development, particularly, say, I mean, in raising children, dealing with your family.
And what is the problem? I've not been able to follow. We all, you see, more or less, we all have these, you see, pride and ego. We have in every one of us.
But you freed pride in people by praising them. I mean, you want to raise somebody's self-esteem.
You see, we feel flattered if anybody praises us. We just feel flattered if anybody praises us. We feel dejected if anybody tells us our own weaknesses. Actually, we always know where we stand. We know that is flattery, and we know what he tells us perhaps is the truth. But still we don't want to face the truth. We want to live in illusions. Even if we have weaknesses, we like to be flattered. Even if we don't deserve any compliments, we like to be flattered. That pleases us. That is the human nature.
In terms of giving compliments to other people, there's no harm in that.
There's no harm. I don't say it's any harmful. It depends how the other person takes it. Yes?
That's the instruction. In the process of raising children, there's a certain form of praise that has to be given to encourage the soul to grow up from a little bit out of savagery.
Yes, yes, give them. There's no harm in it. Certainly not. No, in order to make them good, even if they are not, you always tell them you are very good. Very good, well behaved. So he tries to be good and tries to behave well. It's just a way of approach, you see. Yes?
After another patient, if he can't see your form inside, they always be sure that your form can see out.
How does it affect you? Well, it's better if the master doesn't see us at all. You see, the difficulty is that master also sees us, knows us. And many things we like to hide and conceal rather than show him or tell him. So we should try to see the master within. Yes? Pardon? Pain? Pain of what? Pain and badness?
Sadness.
Well, when there's a union with the father, then where is the pain and where is the sadness? Ultimately, we have to get ourselves there, at that level.
Is it possible or reasonable for a disciple to go back to Satsang in one life?
What do you mean by reasonable for a disciple? We all like to go in no time, but it depends upon him, not us. We all do our best to go back to him as soon as possible. But then it depends upon him. Yes?
Is he wearing?
Well, sister, whenever you will see your master inside, you will always see him as you have seen him outside. Unless he projects in that form before you, how do you know that he is your master? Actually, it is the Shabad from which the master has projected himself. It is not any physical body at all. There is no turban and no body and nothing at all. Just for your satisfaction, your conviction, he has to come in the same form as you have seen him outside. Actually, it is a Shabad. There's no form at all there. All the radiance of the Shabad. Yes?
The Master always loves us.
Pardon?
Master
always
loves us.
Master away? Well, but for that we won't be on the path. If Master doesn't love us, why should we be on the path? We have not come on the path. We have been drawn on the path. We have been pulled on the path. You must have read a parable in the Bible, New Testament, where Christ gives a parable of 99 sheep and one sheep going astray. And he goes and runs after that one sheep and even physically lifts that sheep and brings us back to the fold. Not that he ignored 99 and ran after the one, because he loves all the 100. He wants them all together. He loves all of them. So if any sheep go astray, he brings them back into the fold again. So he loves all. Shepherd always loves all the sheep.
Master, I've had a little when you're talking about the corruption of the world and God ourselves in the state that we're living in, if not a leaf moves without God at the will, if not a leaf on a tree moves without God's will, if we got ourselves into the state of corruption that we're in, which we did, in the world today, was that not also God's will?
Well, the question is, what is God's will? I have already explained before that. What is God's will? Combination of our own karmas committed in the past, which we are going to face during this span of life. That is God's will.
Our destiny is God's
will. Yes, to go through the destiny is God's will. God has not indiscriminately written for you this karma you have to go through. They are our own. See, we have sown those seeds ourselves. And now we are collecting that crop, being in the body, all which we have seen in the past, sown in the past.
Because the feeling I had last night, I feel that somehow God was sad at the state that man is in, which would indicate that there was no control.
Whether he is sad or not, we are all sad. Because we have committed such actions, such karmas, that we have to go through all that.
So this is just thinking too much, isn't it?
I mean, hair splitting. You see, I'll just tell you. When you go to a court, any criminal goes to a court, the judge gives the judgment whether he is acquitted or whether he should be hanged. He doesn't indiscriminately write a judgment, hang him or acquit him. There is a certain record of evidence before him. All the witnesses have come in the witness box, have given the certain statements about his actions, what they saw, what they knew. On the base of that, judge gives the judgment. Acquit him or hang him. So you cannot accuse the judge. You should accuse yourself. So we say, judge has hanged me. Judge has acquitted me. Actually, we have hanged ourselves. We have been acquitted by our own actions. He only wrote in keeping in view the evidence before him. Evidence of our action is good, he will acquit us. If evidence of our action is bad, he will hang us. So this is the will of the Lord. Just as the judge gives the judgment, so the Lord gives the judgment, keeping in view our actions of the past lives. Actually, they are our own actions. But we have to go through.
That I understand, but was it the will of the Lord to have that prisoner in the court in the first place? That's my confusion.
His actions brought him there to the court. His actions, which he has did, those actions brought him to the court.
That I understand. But was it the judge's will that those actions
have
been committed in the first
person? No. How can we judge? You see, judge will that judge doesn't say that commit these actions. Judge is only sitting to give the judgment. Actions, now you can say judge has given the judgment. Actually, we have given the judgment. We say it's the Lord's will what I am going through. Actually, it is our own will what we are going through. Because we have done all those actions in the past. We don't know about them.
It's a basis of a trust that I have when I go through something that's very sad or frightening to soothe myself. I say, this is God's will.
Naturally, it is easier to go through by blaming the God or taking it from the Father. It's easier to go through. That is why we call it God's will.
So that it's okay to say that.
There's no harm.
Is it accurate?
That is what it meant for.
So that's not a self-deception.
It's not a self-deception. You say, all right, it's the God's will. It is written in my karma which I have go through. You can call it is written in my destiny which I have go through. You can call it is a God's will which I go through. It comes to the same thing.
Because I say, even the bad is good, because that's how it's real.
How it was to happen.
Exactly.
Yes?
When you see yourself, and when you know all the bad things that you are, and you have within you all the filth, and that creates a fear.
You mean when you know our own self, what we have been doing?
When we see and we know that what you say is true, that it's our fault that we're in the field, that we are where we are because it's our own fault. And that creates a fear within you that it stops you from meditating.
That should rather help us to meditate so that we clear all these and we don't have to face all this misery again. You see, if we find there are so many thorns in the room, it's better to, with a broom, to just clear the floor and throw them out, rather than go on thinking how they have been scattered. So we must take a positive step. When we know we are suffering due to our own past actions, so we try to get rid of those actions, effect of those actions, by attending to meditation. Yes?
If there's a friend who committed a sin and after that, he offends, then he has not offended. Can he be forgiven?
Well, it depends upon the Lord And it depends upon the sincerity of the person, how much he's repenting. Well, you see, meditation can burn all the karmas, ultimately. Whether particular karma is forgiven today or tomorrow or some other time, I can't say. But meditation burns all the karmas, present karmas and the past karmas. Meditation definitely takes care of all type of karma, they say. Pardon? What do you mean by instructor to our destiny?
Does he teach us the things that happen to us? Or are they just things that we have to go through?
What do you mean by teaching us to go through the destiny? Well, that's what he says, live in the will of the Lord, face those karmas cheerfully, and attend to your meditation.
But is there no wisdom to be had from the experience of his life?
The wisdom is to attend to meditation. That wisdom will help you to clear all those karmas.